Welcome to Tales from a Bibliophile, a bookish podcast about all things reading and the communities that books create. I'm your host, Carly Galorn Stewart. Each week, I'll have a different guest on to chat all things books. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. That was the weirdest welcome I've ever said. Got real.
Hey, y'all.
Southern. Got real southern.
How y'all doing?
It usually doesn't come out like that. I have to be around like it, and I don't think I've been around it lately.
And clearly you are today.
Than the impression you just did earlier, I guess. but as you can tell.
I was doing my classic hee-haw run.
As you can probably tell at this point, Britton's back.
Hey, it's me, the second boy on the podcast.
Second boy.
I'm not at Erica level yet, but this is my second go around.
That's true.
Erica and I have a bitter feud about who is going to be on the podcast more. Our friendship is no more. It is only rivalry. where once our hearts beat with mutual respect and affection, now there is only rage.
Now there is a grudge.
Yeah,
and
truly.
It will.
Just climbing up the stairs of this podcast, trying to get to the top. That's a horror movie reference.
One day, I'm not going to be here, and it's just going to be you and Erica.
Listen, do not. Don't tempt us. That would be so much fun. Get Keir Bridges in here. Are you kidding me?
I need her in here. We're going to try to do a episode on the Georgia Children's Conference.
Oh,
and
sure,
I want to
sure.
get her and Rebecca because, like, Eric and I want to do it, and I want to get her and Rebecca on because they've both been a lot too, but they've both been on the committee.
Right, right.
Selection committee. And I want the behind the scenes
totally
vibe on that. I applied for that committee and I haven't heard yet. I would get my mom to come talk on that because she was on the committee for a year, but as you might have heard on the last episode, my mom has promised many times and has not shown up yet.
Sure.
She did tell me last week that she was like, oh yeah, we'll reschedule that. And I was like, okay.
Moms.
We will. No.
Do a Mother's Day episode.
She's really busy. That's what Erica said. And I was like, I don't think that's going to happen. No, she's really busy. She's doing, she's in college. So she has like all of her, I think she's about to be done with like.
Yeah, well, she's got to haze all those freshmen.
Yeah, she's got to haze all those children.
Got to hang out on the quad, throw the frisbee around.
Cut the quad.
I've never met your mom, but I'm assuming she's always out
there.
Just
met my mom.
Just throwing the bee. You know, again, hazing freshies, getting a big old hot dog. What do college students do? What happened in that? Is it the idiot, the Elif Bautman book that's about a college student?
Am I
thinking something completely different? But is that about a college student?
I think that's no. I think that's one of the ones Lindsay talked about.
Okay.
When she was
maybe that's.
I'm gonna look it up.
Okay, because what do I know about college? Well, I know that American Pie, they went to college, right? I only saw the first one. Man, I don't know a lot about college.
For someone who has a movie podcast, you don't know a lot about that movie.
Well, about American Pie. In A Beautiful Mind, he hallucinated people while he was in college, which probably happens to a lot of college students, depending on their sort of chosen recreation.
That's fair. That was not my chosen recreation.
Mm-mm.
I was too busy trying to survive college, which is not a... it's not a job at college. It's a job at my health. It's a job at my body. The Idiot by, who'd you say?
Elif Bautman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is.
Is that a college student?
I think so.
Okay.
It's
well,
coming of age.
Okay. Like well, there
it,
you
yeah.
go.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think, yes, it is. It's set at Harvard. Lindsay talked about it as one of the resurgence of the college, like, fiction
genre
coming back.
Okay.
I think it was on here. Maybe it was on the Classic City Vibes episode. She was on.
No, I actually might have been on here.
I think it was on here.
Now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, because I think it was one of her like favorite books from the last year.
Gotcha.
I had a great idea the other day to get you on the podcast more. I was like, what if I just start reading all the books that Britton mentioned in his podcast episode?
Cool.
And then just come back, make you come back and talk about them.
For sure.
And then I was like, they're all 500 pages.
You also read 63 books last year. And in the space of about 4 months.
Half of them were like graphic novels or like those Kindle Unlimited like romances that I like skim through.
The Wayfarer's books don't take that long. I believe in you. I think you can manage it. And also, we have so much to talk about, Carly.
That's true. You can come back anytime.
Between books and movies and college antics.
College antics. I went to a very small private Christian college. So
She's
my,
the Man. That's about a college.
A great movie.
It's a college.
I fucking love that movie.
Story. My friends and I, one time Tyler, his wife, Alex, put it on. And then we all ended up getting very invested in it. And by the end of it, we were like, all right, we have to find the trilogy of Amanda Bynes movies to do on the podcast so we can analyze and really bring the exegesis of She's the Man
that is
to the film.
It's a delightful film.
It has a
film.
Bonkers, buck wild ending.
It does.
There are so many things happening with no repercussions.
No, no, no.
And there should be repercussions.
It's just like, what did we, like...
It's incredible.
What did some, like...
Yeah.
Fancy director tell us to take off, like to cut out.
Or our bodies.
We just made a list of it and then was like, no, put it all in at the end. Like it's, they've left, put it all
in. It's incredible. So that's a good one.
That's now,
I don't know about college, I guess.
I don't.
Mascots.
Mine, we didn't have, did we have, we didn't have football at my school.
Oh.
We had basketball was like the big thing. We had basketball and soccer and lacrosse.
What was the team? Were you guys like the Wildcats or the Buccaneers or the...
It's a great question. Oh, we were the Lions.
Okay.
I had to think about it for a minute.
All right. The Detroit Lions.
Again,
interesting.
I never, ever went to any sports
I never attended games. A sporting event in high
never
school.
Attended
never
attended a sporting event.
No, I've been to sporting events in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. I've been to like professional or like,
sure, yeah.
Whatever the in-between college and... Professional.
Yeah, minor league.
Minor league. I've been to some of those.
Been to an arena football game.
No.
Went to
I've
one of those.
Been to I,
now,
one
now,
college football game. I take that back.
Fundamentally, is there a difference between arena football and other football? Well, it's a ceiling. That's from
like,
what I gathered.
There's a lid.
They put a lid on it. And then they said, no, 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 totally different sport.
Nope, this
totally,
is it. You can't.
You don't understand. Birds can't get down there and mess up our great plays.
Does that happen a lot in open
it's
field?
It's got to.
It has to, right? There
probably when the lights went out during the Super Bowl at that time was because like a seagull like, flew into the thing.
That's amazing. We were at the groundbreaking of our new library location the other day, and the like mayor or somebody was talking, and this like... Two or three geese just like flew by honking so loudly. And I was like, yes,
well,
this is exactly what I wanted to
do. And you're like, don't vote now, geese.
No, no. Don't respond to this nonsense. But no, that's amazing. Yeah, college was my college experience was very insular.
Yeah.
It was a small school. I am a person who only has a few like, I'm not super extroverted. I don't have, like, a ton of friends. Or I'm not, like, a person who, like, gets chatty with, like,
I see.
People all the time.
Interesting.
Very...
This is the opposite of my knowledge of you.
Yeah.
I guess it says more about our energy.
No, no, no. I talk a lot all the time.
Sure.
To the people I am friends with. I just am not, like, a social butterfly,
I
should say. I'm very selective about the people I'm around.
No, I understand.
Any other time you've seen me being friendly to people, especially strangers, that's just the people-pleasing in me.
That
like,
was a lie.
It was all fake. All fake. But no, my father-in-law was the president at the college that I went to. I mean, he wasn't my father-in-law then, but my now father-in-law. And he left like halfway through, and he would not approve wrestling as a sport, which was like kind of pissed off a lot of people because the local high school it has like a big wrestling team, and so a lot of the kids would want to come there because despite costing a stupid amount of money because it's actually a private school, this college is treated kind of like a local community college for like the kids in the area. Like a lot of people go there because it's like 10 minutes from
there,
their house. And then as soon as my father-in-law left, they approved it. Because he wouldn't approve it because the insurance costs were so high.
Sure, that makes sense.
And then so he left in the middle of a financial fiasco, and they brought a new president in. That was not his fault, I would like to clarify. And then the new president came in and was like, no, here's a ton of money that we don't have. Approve that wrestling team.
Wow.
And it all went downhill from there. I wasn't a student there anymore, so it didn't matter.
Sure, you weren't on the wrestling team.
Well, yeah, no.
Did you do sports in school? We're going to talk about books in a minute.
Right.
I say to the computer, the audience, did you do sports or anything in school? Did you do extracurriculars?
I did not. I did not really, I had to think about it. So our school like had some sports and then it had a big like drama department. And so those were kind of the big extracurriculars. I did not have the physical or emotional energy to do anything other than go to classes and like sit on a couch and hang out with my friends. But I did, well, no, that's not true. I did, I was on staff for our Lit magazine. I can't remember what I was originally, but I was a like a editor by the time I left. I was like an assistant editor. I was not like the top person. And then I started a like university chapter of when I was in college. To Write Love on Our Arms launched a like a university program. So I started one of those. But I had like three or four people like helping me out with that. So I planned like one big event. And then that was kind of the extent of my, like we did smaller stuff, but, like, that was the extent of my social extracurricular activities.
Okay. Yeah. I did theater. That was it.
Wouldn't have never have guessed.
All right. No, yeah, that was, but I didn't. I remember being in.
Josh did theater.
Yeah, I get that. I get that now. Yeah. I've now met Josh. He said, "I sing with an angel voice." That's all I need to know.
Did he really?
He did. We were all.
I just didn't hear it.
We all did a game night, and I don't honestly remember. It was 11 o'clock.
Yeah, it was late.
So, 11 o'clock, you got to have an 11 o'clock number. And I said, guys, wait a minute. No. I just kind of, I can't remember what, I started singing, Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
That's right.
Which is a beautiful song, and I don't know why I
started. I can't remember the context,
but
though.
I just remember, apropos of nothing, Josh looking up and going, that's how he sings. An angel voice.
That is so on brand for my husband.
I was like, thank you very much. He was like, that was beautiful.
That is, yes.
So that was good.
That was great. Yeah.
But having said that, I remember being in like elementary or middle school and being like, I think I might do track. I don't know what possessed me to think that I would do track. I don't know why I thought I'd be good at it. And I never did. I mean, now I like exercise and stuff, but like I never. Why in the world would I have done sports?
I quit rec soccer because I didn't like running so much, and then the next year tried out for track.
I don't know what possesses us to do.
And I kept it. It was like seventh grade. I stayed in it. My grandfather would take me to meets a lot because my parents were busy with my younger siblings, and he would stop at this gas station because the meets were in a lot of times in the same place. He would stop at this gas station to get a Diet Coke, and I would like to, you know, hold him over for the day. And I would get a Monster energy drink and a chocolate pudding. And I would drink them. I would drink it, the whole thing, and eat the chocolate pudding before I ran track. And it was like, I think that's the only reason I succeeded.
Remember when our bodies could do that?
Literally.
Do you remember when we could digest that?
I think like 2 years later, my body started. Maybe that's why I have garbage health. Maybe it was all the Monsters.
It was just, I will clarify for the audience, neither of us feel or actually consider ourselves to be old. I'm 34.
No.
You're like 29. You're 30.
I'm 30. I'm almost 31. Okay. But my chronic illness does advance that feeling. But yes, actually, we're very young.
Yeah. Well, and my ability to describe the Clinton administration to some degree.
It absolutely.
It's bizarre.
We should read Hillary and talk about that.
Do you know that book she, quote, wrote with
Patterson? No. It wasn't. Was it James Patterson? It was Stacey Abrams.
Who did
Bill Clinton wrote with? Bill Clinton wrote with James Patterson.
Hillary wrote with was it Erdrich or Penny?
Oh yes, she did. She wrote one with Stacey Abrams and one with Louise Penny.
I saw a video on YouTube. I didn't watch it, but I saw the thumbnail that it was Patterson and Clinton like talking to each other, and I was like, I cannot imagine for us. I don't that even know what that would be like. So anyway, I wrote a book. That's right. Because I think that previously, my friends and I at work went, listen, everyone out there, go watch, just go on YouTube and type in James Patterson
commercial. Don't do it.
No, do it. They're like 16 seconds long. They are so funny.
They are funny.
But he...
I just hate his voice.
He has one where the book is called Mistress. And he's like, I am James Patterson and I have a mistress. She's sexy.
I haven't seen that one.
She's dangerous. And it's just so weird. And I really love the idea of him being like, I'm James Patterson and I have a mistress. I'm Bill Clinton and I can't talk about it. Like, I don't know what. It's so good to me.
Oh, my God.
It's so funny.
I have not seen that one. I think I've only seen the superhero one you made.
The superhero one's my favorite. It's my favorite one. The pirate one's pretty good, too, because...
Oh, my God, there's a pirate
one. There's a pirate one. There's a lot. There's one called Crazy House where he has a twin, but there's nothing crazy about it. Like, it's just... It's really worth your time.
Oh, my God. What is that book?
Hillary did write something with...
No. It's not by her. It's called Hillary, and it's like a fictionalized, like, account of her life.
Because I imagine there would be something... I remember there's a documentary that came out about her 2016 campaign that really kind of dived into the various things she was dealing with.
She did write that, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, the docuseries thing or documentary or whatever it was, that I could see being very interesting. Because I imagine, however you feel about her particular career in politics would be interesting. And there would be a lot of nuances and a lot of multi-sided and multifaceted things about it. A fictionalized telling of her life feels to me extraneous.
It's about her time as like a college student.
Okay.
So it was
so she could tell it like...
There you go. We brought it back.
There's another college thing.
It's called Rodham. That's why I couldn't find it. It's Curtis Seinfeld. It's Curtis Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Who has come out... Their two most recent books are romance novels, so I am vaguely confused by their...
The tagline was... Curtis Seinfeld?
Curtis Seinfeld, okay. Yeah.
The tagline is, what was the deal with Hillary in college?
So I started writing that book, and I'm like building out my characters, and I'm like I found like a website that was like, I think it was Scrivener, was like, here's like a survey to fill out, basically. It's all these questions to ask so you can build up your characters, so that the background's there. And it was like, what's this person's favorite TV show? And I was like, all right, this is a white girl who's in her late 20s. I cannot make her favorite show Gilmore Girls. Like, I have to find something.
Is she 20 in her 20s in 2023?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay,
yeah.
Then yeah, it would have to be like...
It would, yeah. But no, I was like, it would be... Because I'm like loosely building... It is not like... It's not me as a character, but I'm pulling a lot just because it's that Write What You Know thing.
Yeah.
And so she's like my age. And yeah, I guess it's now so that I don't... It's not like...
At the time when Gilmore Girls wasn't
right,
a show,
yes. But I... My sister's 21... 22? I think she just turned 22. Gilmore Girls and One Tree Hill are her favorite shows.
Good.
And I was like, I can't do that.
Sure.
I cannot make this character
because
Starbucks college girl, like white girl cliche.
In a book, it would feel quirky.
Right. I don't want that. So I made her favorite show Seinfeld.
That's definitely... Okay.
But
I was hoping you would say Outer Banks or something, which I totally know what that show is about. No.
I think it is about treasure. My dad loves that show. My dad's favorite show is 90210, though, so it tracks that that Outer Banks is the show he likes.
Oh, that's awesome.
My dad is 40. What am I? I'm 31. My dad is 46, 47. I don't know. He's not my biological father.
Okay.
For listeners who are doing that math.
Yeah.
He would have had me in like 10th grade. But his favorite show is 90210. So it tracks that he likes Outer Banks. He's just like teenage sitcom person, I guess.
That's so good.
But no, I only know anything about that show because I've been like I've been watching Kelsey Ballerini, this country singer, live her best life.
Okay.
And she just went through like this divorce and like put out a incredible like emotional EP that like TikTok has devoured.
Oh, gotcha.
That's very like we don't need the whole story. You can type her name into TikTok, but she's dating now one of the main guys from Outer Banks. And
gotcha.
So she like changed. She was at a live show and he like is one of the things TikTok is like obsessed with is that he's like at all of her shows.
Mm-hmm.
And she changed like the words one night to one of the songs to like his name in it. And I was just like, this is all I know about Outer Banks and this person is because of TikTok's obsession with this delightful country singer.
I just know that Netflix is always like, here they are in a cabana. And I'm like, I'm not going to watch it.
Mm-mm.
But thanks.
Thanks. No.
I'm glad they're in a cabana.
It pushes it real hard and I just won't do it. I can't do it.
And this is not to shame that show. I'm sure it's good. The only actor I know in it is Madeline Klein, who is in Glass Onion, and she's good in Glass Onion.
Oh, we didn't watch Glass Onion yet, but Sway and I watched... Knives Out on our last movie, or not last movie night, movie night before last. Last movie night, we watched some anime show. Not anime show, an anime, like a... It's not a Studio Ghibli, but it's like Studio Ghibli adjacent.
Okay.
Or maybe it's Studio Ghibli, but it's not Miyazaki. Okay. I don't know.
What was it called?
I don't remember.
Okay.
It had a trickier name. Although, okay. No, I was going to say I Googled something, but I always forget. I, like, stay in privacy mode on my Google thing on my phone, so it has no history to look.
But you watch Knives Out.
We watched Knives Out the first time, and it was a delight.
It's so,
like, I kind of
had
been holding out. I don't know why. I guess I was just like, no, this is a Netflix, like, mystery.
Oh,
it's going to
be,
like, overrated. But no, it was great.
Far
it was
away.
A delight.
So much more.
It's
a beautiful. We did it. We, on Here Come the Sequels.
I need to listen to those.
We did Knives Out and Glass Onion as our Christmas and New Year's episodes last year.
Nice.
Christmas and New Year's, yes. And we're big, Tyler is a big fan of both those movies. I really like Glass Onion. I love Knives Out.
Yeah.
Like, Daniel Craig is so good in those movies. Chris Evans so good in it.
We were talking about that.
Michael
Shannon. With Chris Evans, like,
he's
I
wonderful.
Wish he played more roles like that.
Yeah.
Because he is very, like...
He's such a likable guy.
He is. And he's such a good actor that, like, he can portray that, like, not likable character.
Right. He did a movie called Snowpiercer that is my favorite movie he's in.
And I've seen that one.
It's really good. It's dark and gritty. But he's pretty brutal in it. He's wonderful. It's a really great performance. But I just love the way he says, like, and for a penny.
Yeah.
He's great with one line. He's great with, like, one-offs. He's great.
He is.
Yeah.
So. I don't know how he ended up here. Oh, Seinfeld. okay, I did it because this character has two older brothers.
Uh-huh.
And she's, and she's, like, being raised by... her aunt and her two uncles, and it's very 3 minutes and a baby, I realized later, but like it's her adult life. But I was like, no, like I'm just doing this like, oh, her older brother or one of her uncles or somebody like watched it. Like somebody who's like a generation older than, well, I guess her brothers aren't a full generation older than, whatever. Mm-hmm. Someone older than her, like she grew up watching it. And also I'm trying to like, when I'm putting stuff in, I'm like, I'm trying to pull it from something or someone that I know in real life so that I like have the knowledge already or I can ask that person.
Sure. Yeah.
So one of my friends who is like almost 10 years older than me, his favorite show is Seinfeld. And I was like, I'm going to ask you all the Seinfeld questions. I've also asked him about beer.
Okay.
And I was like, I might ask you about hockey too. And he was like, I need my character to in this book to be like a chiseled like tobacco farm owner from Venezuela or something. And I was like, you're not in this book, but okay. you might have to, I might have to put him in there now.
Is the Seinfeld woman, is her favorite band going to be one of my favorite bands? Because you asked me what my favorite
bands
were.
I did ask you what your favorite bands were. I think I was doing...
Because I will talk about Wolf Alice for as long as people will let me.
I think I was doing a different character's
band.
Maybe I was doing hers. I don't know. I haven't solidified bands yet.
Sure, sure.
It's a question on there, though.
I
did solidify hers. That was not one of hers. I think I was asking for, because she has two brothers.
Okay.
And she has two best friends.
And you were like, ah, oh, there's a lot of girl rock on here.
And
I don't know.
Like, actually, what? Again, I pulled from, like, my life experience where I just like a bunch of different stuff for different reasons.
Right, right.
Like, different people in my life influenced it or whatever. So she kind of has an all-over-the-place band. But I did text Brenton the other day and be like, what are your favorite bands? And he was like, here are four bands that are only letters in capitals.
Yeah, Churches, Haim, and R.E.M.
Which R.E.M. is very reasonable. I think it threw me at first, though, because you didn't put the periods in, and
I didn't
realize it was, like, the R.E.M.
The band R.E.M. Right. Yeah, I never know if they... I feel like I've seen it both ways.
Yeah, I think I have, too. I don't know if they
And it's funny because Haim is just their last name.
It is, yeah.
So they're just like, what if we just capitalized it?
Yeah.
Just yelling it, which is good.
I know nothing about them other than that one song they did with Taylor Swift, which is a delight. It's like this generation's Goodbye Earl, and fucking love it.
I worship Haim. They are.
They're delightful. Have you seen the Taylor Swift video that they're doing?
Yeah.
The new one?
Yeah. From the new Bejeweled?
Album? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was great. Okay, so here's my opinion. I remember I watched that video 25 minutes after it dropped. Not because I was waiting for it. YouTube was just like, this was 25 minutes ago. And I don't know how else to describe it other than their hairstyling was correct. Because Estee's was like kind of elegant and Alana's was like high and tight. And Danielle's is just like, yeah, it's a bun. And it was just kind of like on her head. Like it was loose. And I mean, again, it's Danielle. She looked amazing. Yeah. But I was like, that is exactly what their hairstyle should be. You did it right.
I also love that Laura Dern was like the evil stepmother. I was just like, Ash and I made our other coworker watch that video the other day we were just like, no, so you have to. Oh, no, it was because somebody hummed a tune that sounded just like the little sing-songy I'm going to go get wasted line that they do. And I was like, you have to watch the whole video. Just have this. That's amazing, though. Okay, anyways, I guess we could talk about books. We're kind of talking about books and movies.
Yeah.
We're doing our first book to movie podcast episode that Britton is. Oh, I forgot your books, man.
Oh, that's okay. We'll get next time.
It's just annoying because I thought about it this morning.
Sure.
We're going to do a series where we read a book and watch the movie and then talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I had two books to bring Britton for our next little adventures, and I left them sitting at my house. But speaking of Daisy, we're going to do Daisy Jones and the Six.
Yes, yeah.
But also I realized we could just jump straight in because that girl, Taylor Jenkins Reid, who is one of my like author heroes, she has four original books or like her original canon, which is how my brain thinks about it because it's her writing shifted to a different style. But she has the four original ones and then she has Evelyn Hugo and Daisy Jones.
I didn't know she did Evelyn Hugo.
She did Evelyn Hugo. She did Evelyn Hugo, Daisy Jones, Malibu Rising, Carrie Soto's back, and I think she has nine novels out.
Okay.
Six of them have gotten television or movie deals in the last 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Like, they got, I think it was Daisy Jones and the Six, like, they got that one, and then it just sort of...
Well, and that's, from as much as anything, is a hit. That feels like a hit. People really responded well to the show. And
it'll be cool to do a show, too. I haven't started watching it yet. Josh said he would watch it with me, but we haven't started it yet.
I like Riley Keough a lot.
Yeah, it looks like it has a great cast. And I love the guy that plays...
Sam Claflin.
Yeah.
I always get... I've said this on my podcast, but I always get Sam Claflin, Finn Wittrock, and Finn Jones mixed up. And here's why. Finn Jones and Finn Wittrock are both named Finn.
Who are they?
Finn Jones is Loras Tyrell and Iron Fist. Loras Tyrell from Game of Thrones and he's Iron Fist and Iron Fist. Finn Wittrock is an actor in movies. And then Sam Claflin plays Finn
in The Hunger Games.
In The Hunger Games. So I was like, Finnick, Finn, and Finn. And they're all, and I mean this not as a pejorative because I am this.
I was going to say,
they're all white.
You're going to say,
they're all white guys.
They're all white guys with brown hair. And I'm sitting here thinking, you actually kind of look like Sam Claflin.
Exactly.
So.
Thank you. They're all like just really handsome, great looking people.
Just handsome,
who are charming and smart and funny and ladies, single. And I don't know what their lives are. But so I always get them mixed up. But yeah, Claflin, he was in Me Before You, which I don't like. But
I also don't like that.
I have a lot of problems with that.
I have a lot of problems with the book and a lot of problems with the movie.
My problem with that movie is not Emilia Clarke.
No, she's a delight.
Her performances give me diabetes. But I don't blame her for it.
Right. Yes. No. But like, as
quick
much
rec.
As...
Anyone who wants to see Emilia Clarke I think treated the best she's been treated. Go watch Last Christmas.
I was gonna say, is it the one? Christmas. Well, I'm not gonna say that because it's a spoiler.
Sure.
But...
I also think that movie works better if you know the spoiler. If you go in thinking, I don't know. I think if you know the spoiler, you kind of set up for what the movie is better. Mm-hmm. I think that is the best performance she's given. I think she's marvelous.
I watched it. I'll have to watch it.
I really like her. She's great.
The scene in Me Before You where she gets the bumblebee tights, though.
Sure.
Like, just divide. Just such a delight to me. No, that storyline sucks, though.
Yeah, but she is so good in Last Christmas. She used to play all this whole range of things. She gets to, you know, move her face, which she didn't get to do a lot on Game of Thrones. She gets to, like, be so funny and tragic and, like...
She is, and she's a very funny person.
She's very funny. Very funny performer, yes. Yeah. I think Last Christmas got a lot of bad press because it was mismarketed. Or people...
Oh, yes.
I'm garbling. But I think that performance really shows off what she can do better than her most famous part.
Right, yeah. Well, because her most favorite part is a very specific character.
It's a very specific character, and so it's mostly presiding and yelling.
Yeah.
And not that that doesn't mean you can't, like, you can still act within that. And I think she does her best. It's just that part doesn't really exploit, I guess, the depth of range that she has.
I feel that way about Kristen Stewart in Twilight.
Yeah.
She got so much shit for, like, not being a good actress because of the Twilight movies. But she was so, like, if you read the books, that's exactly how the character was. She did a great job portraying that. But she's an incredible actress.
Oh, my God. She was so much fun in the new Charlie's Angels.
I was just about to say that. She was. I love the new Charlie's Angels.
It's a great movie. And she's so fun. And that has the right angle on her awkwardness, where it's like, what if she wasn't awkward in the way of, like, I don't know how to talk to people, but awkward that she's so daffy and excited about being a spy, like,
yeah, and also, like, super hot in that movie.
That,
like,
yeah,
she exudes that. Well,
completely.
Yes, in general.
Oh,
yes.
Happiest Season. Yeah. She did a movie called Clouds.
Oh, I watched Happiest Season this year. It's so sweet.
Our best friend Mackenzie Davis, and she's really wonderful in Clouds of Sils Maria, which is.
I don't think I saw that one.
Yeah, it's her and Juliette Binoche. They're both really great in it.
I did see her in that tragic, like, made me super fucking angry movie about 9/11. I think it was with the guy who plays Edward in Twilight too, wasn't it?
Oh, Pattinson?
I think it was Pattinson again.
I don't know, maybe.
But I don't know.
Was that Remember Me?
Yes, okay. Remember Me. Which made me so mad. I also get really mad when, like, stories throw 9/11 in unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Like, if I know it's part of it,
right. But when they're just like, guess what?
Yes, which happened in, I can't remember. It was a Tracy Garvis book. And that's not her full name. She has a third name. I can't remember. But it was a great book. And I was super enjoying it. And then all of a sudden, because she lives in New York, all of a sudden 9/11's happening. And I'm what? I just realized that this is the second podcast episode in a row where we talk about 9/11. So you're welcome. Eric and I talked about it on the last one.
I have not finished that episode yet. I haven't gotten to 9/11 in my processing.
Can't remember why.
I really love, because it's about Poetry Month. So at some point, Eric could be like, also, guys, real quick, 9/11 was messed up.
I remember why now. It's because I brought up David Levithan, and because he has several novels in verse. And there was one that the characters are in New York as 9/11 is happening. They're, like, distanced from it, but it's very clear that that's what the book is about.
Right.
Like, you can see the Twin Towers on the cover. And I was like, this is how you market it if you're going to write about it.
This is the deal.
But yeah, that's why I came up. Then we started talking about 9/11 in fiction, but whatever.
Sure.
So you're welcome, guys. enjoy that.
Well, much like books about 9/11, I will be extremely loud and incredibly close, which is a beautiful book.
Beautiful book and a great movie.
I never saw the movie.
It was good. I think it was that movie. It was one of his books got me into a movie. That was really
good. Everything is Illuminated with Elijah
Maybe
Wood.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Because that one, people really liked that movie.
Yeah. Elijah Wood is great. And showed up in, we've been watching Yellowjackets. And showed up in Yellowjackets randomly. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And I usually don't like watching shows as they come out. I'm a very much a binge person. Sir, are you?
I just got a message from Erica that says, y'all, I can hear Britton imitating me from the hallway. It's actually spot on.
Erica, come in the room. Why is she here so early? Oh, it's 2:30.
Okay.
So we should probably actually talk about our show.
Sure.
Our topic for the day. She should come in, though. That's a delight. I realize I've been using that word a lot more, but I love it. So we're going to talk about Coraline today.
We
read the book and we watched the movie.
We sure did.
The book is by Neil Gaiman. Mm-hmm.
And the movie is directed by Henry Selick.
Yes.
Director of James the Giant Peach, Monkey Bone, and The Nightmare Before Christmas. Because, fun movie fact, Tim Burton did not direct Nightmare Before Christmas. It is very much his movie. He had a lot of creative input.
It's his story.
It's his
idea. It's based on his poem.
It's like his thing.
Did you know that was based on a poem?
I think I did. Because I think we had
the
book.
Yeah, it's published as a children's book.
Yeah. But Henry Selick actually directed it.
And also, fun fact, Tim Burton has nothing to do with Coraline.
Right. Not a thing in the world. Which, why, whenever people are like, oh, what's your favorite Tim Burton movie? Which happens to me every day, everywhere I go. coffee shops.
The answer is Big Fish.
Bike shop. Big Fish is used to be my answer. Big Fish is a great movie.
We almost watched that last
time. I don't know what it would, because I haven't watched Big Fish in a long time. Ed Wood is another one that's really high up there. Mm-hmm. And then I do like the Sweeney Todd movie, but that's another conversation.
Yes.
But yeah. Coraline. So had you, what was your sort of history with this?
I'd seen the movie multiple times, probably because I love Tim Burton and it got like mixed in with that. And I was like, Oh, okay. But I'd seen the movie multiple times, although I hadn't seen it in a while. And I think I read the book when I was like in college, maybe. I'd read it before, but it had been several years. I went through a phase where I was trying to read through all of Neil Gaiman because I had read The Ocean at the End of the Lane. And I was like, this is the, like, it, and it is still actually one of my top favorite books. It was just such a beautiful, I listened to the audiobook of it. And it was so good. And so I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to read all his other stuff. And I read the Graveyard book in college for a project. So that's actually probably when I read Coraline, because I read the Graveyard book. I was analyzing if a book should be, the project was like, if a book should be shelved in children's, of pushback stuff. And so I did the Graveyard book. And then I think I did Coraline too as like a companion. And I think I decided that both Coraline and the Graveyard book should be shelved in young adult.
Sure.
But then when I was talking about this with another person recently, I realized that like, well, and my reasoning was like, they're like pretty dark topics.
Yeah.
But then I was like, no, I devoured Goosebumps and Scary Stories and everyone, like kids, sure. I didn't read them, but kids when I was growing up really loved those Mary Han Down books, are like little mini kids horror stories, basically.
Right.
So, you know what, whatever, they can stay there. They can be, I think I looked in our region and it's in both across the board. But yeah, so I had watched and read them before, but it had been a while. What about you?
I had never read the book. I saw the movie when it came out, it's like 14 years ago.
Yeah, it is. I didn't realize it had come out so long ago.
Yeah. The thing about quality animation is it never really ages.
It's true.
Just, I mean, in terms of, like, the visuals of
And it's a beautiful movie.
It's a gorgeous-looking movie. And so I'd seen it then and loved it and have watched it kind of intermittently in that time. And I rewatched it, I guess, last October as, like, a October time movie. Because it's not a Halloween movie and it's not an autumn movie, but it's kind of that.
Yeah. I do that in October. I watch like a ton of movies.
Yeah.
And I do a mix of like actually Halloween movies, actually like horror movies, and then just a lot of Tim Burton.
And one of my favorites is another movie by, this is a Leica film studio, Leica Studios movie, and they did one called Paranorman.
I love that one.
It's a stunning movie.
It's probably so pretty.
If I like it more than Coraline, it's by like a hair.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I love Coraline, but I really love
that. That was a fun like story.
It's a great story. It's a great anti-bullying movie.
And When that movie came out in theaters, they did Frankenweenie as the short.
Okay, sure.
And Frankenweenie is one of my favorite. Yeah. Like, it is, it's so cute.
Yeah.
But
I had never read this book, and one of my literary hot takes is that I don't like Neil Gaiman.
I know, I was surprised about that, because you recommended it, and I was like, oh, okay.
I am surprised, too, that I, and I think, I will clarify that my feelings about Neil Gaiman are not critical. It's not, here's why I think he's bad. I don't think he's bad.
Yeah,
it's literally
just
that it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
My friend Jonathan now sort of doesn't tease me about it, but he brings it up that the word I would use for Neil Gaiman is precious macabre.
Yes.
Because it's kind of what he does. He strikes me as someone who would call villains baddies, and I don't like that. I don't like that. I don't like food words used about, not about food, and I don't like baddies for villains.
That's
I don't like the phrase deliciously evil or any of that stuff.
That's funny. That is precious. Macabre is pretty on brand
for him,
though.
That's what he does.
Especially the stuff geared towards younger kids.
Yes, which I think is fine. And I think he strikes me as a lovely guy. And I think he has some neat ideas. And I've read a bunch of his books. And
have you read The Ocean at the End of the Lane?
See, I haven't read that one.
Okay, I would say even if you don't love his stuff, I would recommend that one. It's like Coraline. It's shorter.
Sure.
The audiobook narration is great. But it's more like magical realism.
Yeah.
versus like straight fantasy.
Yeah. I think not similarly to Tarantino, where Tarantino does not strike me as a lovely man, and I do have problems with his movies. But I remain kind of curious about his movies. So I might watch that at some point because maybe I will find something in it.
Right.
With Neil Gaiman, I continue to be like, yeah, I might read like Ocean at the End of the Land is probably the main one. And I'm like, I might give that one a shot.
That's kind of the only other one I would say.
Yeah, more to like test my opinion more than I like. He did the North Mythology collection that's stuff that I kind of liked. So all that to say, I love the movie. I wasn't crazy about the book. It's very short. It still took me a minute.
Yeah.
It just became something I needed to like push through.
I enjoyed the book, but I love Neil Gaiman. So that's not surprising. I did like the movie more though.
Sure.
It's one of the very few movies that I prefer the movie over the book. The other one is Practical Magic.
Oh yeah, I've never read that. I've watched it.
I really, really love the book, and I think, and we're going to do this as an episode, like, in October, so we can go more in depth on that.
For sure.
But, like, I think the thing with that one is Practical Magic now is one of several books about the women in this family, and my favorite thing about the movie is the aunts.
Oh, okay.
And the aunts are not, they don't play a big role in the book, or at least as big of a role as they do in the movie.
Yeah.
And so I didn't like that. And then I like realized I think they have their own book. So I'm just going to go read
them. Sure.
I liked the movie a lot more for Coraline.
And it was really surprising to me because I'd seen the movie, I don't know, 4 or 5 times or whatever by the time I read the book. Wybie is not in the book.
He's not in the book. And I was like, what is happening?
And I was so surprised because
it's very sad.
The character, for there to be a character whose name is Wybie, which is short for Why Born, and he drives around on a dirt bike and has a skull helmet and has like a hunch in his neck.
Yeah.
That is such a Neil Gaiman
character. It is.
That is like the dark joke of Why Born alone is a Neil Gaiman thing.
Right.
And it wasn't even, he was like a small role or he was like...
Right. No, he was a massive role. He was like the second...
He's a massive part of the movie.
Coraline obviously is the main character, but like he's kind of the second, biggest supporting character role.
And so I wonder if this was something that Neil Gaiman had the idea for the book. It was just like, I couldn't make it work.
Yeah, I wonder if it was his idea.
And then he told Selleck about it. And I don't think Gaiman wrote the movie. I'm sure he was involved with it.
Yeah.
But that if he was like, oh, I had this idea. And they're like, oh, cool, we'll use it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, the book and the movie are pretty close.
They are pretty similar. They're like, there are two bigger things that I like thought actually affected the storyline. Like, there's some smaller things. Like, I think in the book, they're in England, which makes sense because Neil Gaiman is British.
Right.
And in the movie, they're in America. So there's, like, small stuff like that. But there are two, like, bigger plot points, which were Wybie and the doll. The doll was not
in the
book.
Yeah, the doll's not a thing. Right.
Which I was also surprised by because it's less of a like storyline than Wybie is, but it still felt like a really big part of the movie.
Yeah. What's that gorgeous opening the credit sequence of her making the doll?
Yes.
Which is so freaky.
The opening sequence is so gorgeous. Yeah. I like made Sway play it back.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to see that again. Actually, I didn't make him play it back on purpose. We started it and then something happened and we left the house to go do something and then came back and we watched it again.
Right.
We settled down to watch the movie.
Yeah.
And we're like, go. And then I had to go do something like that popped up. I loved Wybie and I feel like he played the role of like, I don't know what the terminology is. It's been 10 years since I've been in an English class, but like the role of like the person sort of guiding you through on the journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was not in the book at all. Like it was all very much her just sort of stumbling through.
Right.
And I didn't like that.
Yeah. I think he just added a lot and he didn't feel forced. I think that was the other kind of surprise.
It was very natural.
If anything, it made me even more impressed by the movie that I was like, you added a whole new character, made them a huge part of it. And it doesn't feel like it detracts from anything else.
It doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like... And I will say, like, the book is really short. So I'm not surprised that they added in some stuff like that to sort of expand it. I was really surprised. And then... Because I watched the movie first and then went back and read the book. And I was like, what's... Where?
Yeah. No, for sure.
I did love when he just, like, rolled up on his dirt bike, like... and startled her all the time.
Yeah.
Also, Coraline was a lot more feisty, I guess. She was a lot more, like, she was sarcastic in the book, but she was quiet.
Yeah.
And she was very loud and pushy in the movie, which I think fits it well, just very different.
Yeah. I think she's about the same age.
Yeah, I think.
I don't think they changed that. Yeah,
I think that's the same.
The book also doesn't have a song by They Might Be Giants.
The song made me so happy.
Because I already love that John Hodgman is the dad. And they're like, who can be John Hodgman's singing voice? I know. They Might Be Giants. And it works.
It works.
And it's a delightful song.
Yeah. I think my favorite part of the whole movie is the cat. And the cat was in
the book as well.
And his character was pretty similar across the board. But
voiced by Keith David, one of the great speaking voices of entertainment.
It was so good. I don't think I paid attention to who... Which is why I wanted to do the series with you, because you are the movie person who pays attention to that stuff, and I don't always.
When they cast it, it's Dakota Fanning.
I was going to say, Dakota Fanning, I did remember.
Yeah, Terry Hatcher's the mother.
Yes, her voice is very distinct, and I immediately was like, oh, it's that girl from the Housewife show.
Right. And that's the two mermaids are, I believe...
I love them.
I believe it's the Ab Fab ladies. I think it's Dawn French and Jennifer Saunders.
I don't know who that is.
Unless I'm getting those people wrong. Ian McShane, who is an often underused actor who is blistering on Deadwood, he's the...
The upstairs circus guy?
He's the circus guy.
Yeah. I love the circus guy.
He's great. That's a great character. I love the mice very much.
I love the mice.
I love Ian McShane
when he was like... Oh, what's his name? Mr...
Yeah, it starts with a B.
It's something funny. I loved when he was like, the mice... say this.
Oh, the mice say, like, rat-a-tata and they should be going toodle-oodle
right.
or something?
No, not even that. It was, like, when the mice were communicating to Coraline through him.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that was, like, so the doll was the other thing that was really different, and I think I really liked it added, like, obviously a creepy factor, but I liked, and why, it was kind of a, it's why being the doll, because they are connected. But it was that, Mr. Bobinski. I had to look it up because it was so, it was a great name. But the whole, like, if you haven't seen the movie and you've only read the book, the whole plot point with YB is that his grandmother owns the house and that his grandmother's sister, when they were kids living there, disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doll was her sister's doll.
Right.
But really the doll was like the way that the other mother watched Coraline.
Right.
And the doll like looks exactly like Coraline, has the raincoat and the boots and the hat or the hair. But I liked the added layer of like, I don't know, I guess it just, like I said, it filled out the story a lot more because it is a very narrow story in the book.
Well, and both the book and the movie do this thing where you think it's over and they go, no, we have another mission.
Yes.
You now have to go and collect these three items.
Yes.
Which I think both in the book and the movie, even though I knew it was coming, still feels kind of jarring. It feels kind of like, oh, and now we're doing this. But it's really fun and it's essentially a video game. And she's got
essentially a video game.
The thing where she's the rock that she's looking through.
I loved that. That's a specific thing, too. I loved the mermaids arguing over what that was actually,
it
actually did. And I loved the Scotty dogs.
Yeah, with the little ushers in the theater.
Yes. Ugh, it was a delay. And when it got mad that she didn't have a ticket, but it was like, all right, fine. Like, you come in, I guess. Because it was kind of a whole other storyline, but it made sense because it was like the world building, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just like, oh, the other mother exists and it's only you that she's...
Right.
But it was like, no, like, her whole thing is that she feeds off of, like, little kids' souls.
Yeah. Well, I loved how we get this wonderful setup the first time she goes into the other world, I guess, where you see, for her, these, like, the idealized version of everything.
Right, yes.
Where the colors are bright and vivid and everyone's, like, coiffed and groomed, and they've got these cool things. They're doing shows and delicious food. And then when she goes back through it again, you see those same settings, but now they're nightmares.
Right.
I really like that turn.
That visual was great.
Is really cool. And you see the same things, but now they're evil.
Right. Because the whole plot is, like, Coraline's just a disgruntled kid yeah. because her parents aren't paying attention to her and she's bored right, and right. her dad makes fancy food she doesn't want to eat. And so, like, the whole vibe with the other mother is that she entices children in right. by, like, being like, here's everything you want.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, like you said, the next time you come, it's like, oh, actually, that's, you know, yeah, it's, a nightmare.
It's a pretty word. Yeah. It's not truth. I think it's really neat that they adapted the book into animation, specifically stop motion.
Yes.
Because stop motion animation, it's not as ubiquitous as other types for a lot of understandable reasons. But it just works.
It's a very specific visual, I feel yeah. like, and it works really well with the darker stories.
Well, and what I love about this movie is how tangible it is. Mm-hmm. It's such a – and I know it's obvious that it's physical because the puppets are moving around and stuff. But, like, it looks – you can tell that it's
physical. Oh, yeah.
Like, the part where she first opens the door and you see the tunnel unfolding, yes. you can tell that's somebody, like, pulling –
actually, yeah.
like, the accordion roll thing just
– yeah.
And I love that to me didn't feel like, oh, it's taking me out of it.
No.
No, it was more absorbing and it was more like, yeah, she is literally in this space. And to have it's the inverse, I guess, of when you're watching a movie, a live action movie, and there's something like, well, that's obviously a digital effect.
A special effect, yeah, yeah.
Thanos isn't a real guy, but you are seeing the real world, and then something you can't really buy because you know it's a right. tennis ball on a stick.
Yeah.
But this is the inverse. Like, I'm watching an animated thing, but now I see how physical that is. That makes it scarier. That
right.
makes it more involving and makes the food
it's
look
more
even
immersive, delicious. I feel like.
And then more terrifying when you see the other father just get more and more, like, disheveled
yes.
and squatted and, mm-hmm. and sewed up. Like, it's just
the way that the characters sort of dissolve oh. towards the end of the movie is... The visuals on that are incredible. Yeah. I think this is a great story, like written story to bring
yeah.
into a visual format because it really lends itself very well. Like, it's a descriptive – Gaiman's a descriptive writer,
yes.
but, like, it – I don't know. And the other thing in the book, I forgot there were pictures. Like, there were
yeah.
illustrations in the book.
By Dave McKeon, which are great.
They are great.
I really like those.
I don't think I realized because I listened to the first 75% of the book I did on audio, which mm-hmm. is also great because Gaiman reads a lot of his own
mm-hmm.
Audiobooks. Yeah, and he does that kid sort of mm-hmm. vibe really well, too. And so I didn't realize there were pictures. But, oh, the other thing, so sort of the inverse, like you get to see the illustrations with the physical book, but in the audio, there's this, like, little song that plays
okay.
at different intervals. It's kind of like when the book is shifting into a different part,
okay.
or the story's shifting into a different part. It's this creepy little song that, like, gets played over
yeah.
and over, and it's hard to actually kind of understand what they're saying, which
okay.
kind of makes it creepier. You catch it more at, like, certain parts,
uh-huh.
but so I actually would... If you enjoy the story or you're interested in the book, I would recommend the audio, but also get your hands on a copy
yeah.
of the physical to, like, look at the illustrations.
Yeah.
The illustrations were so much creepier
yes,
than I expected them to be. They were very, very creepy.
I'm pretty sure they're Dave McKeon, which is also impressive because they weren't unintelligible. And I really like Dave McKeon. He drew the covers for Sandman.
Oh, okay, yeah. Then that would make sense. Yeah, that...
Yeah, he's
connected. Is it Chris
Riddell?
But yeah, I don't know.
Okay, yeah, Dave McKeon.
Okay.
But he did with Grant Morrison a Batman comic called Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth, which is...
I don't know that one.
It's a beautiful looking book. It is impenetrable. Like, I had... You read it, and then at the end they have, at least the edition I read, was basically... The drafts with all of Morrison's
oh, yeah.
notes to McDave of or Dave to McKeon of, like, hey, and this is kind of what I'm envisioning, and this is mm-hmm. kind of how I'll break it down. And I was like, oh, that was Scarecrow. Okay.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
I can read through it and go, that's what happened.
Ah, yes.
But, like, the Joker in it looks terrifying. And
ugh, yeah.
But yeah, no, Dave McKeon's a wonderful artist, but I can't always tell what I'm looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
In here, I could, and it was
yeah.
terrifying.
Yeah. In Coraline, it is very. Clear.
Well, and you mentioned the song. One of my favorite things about the movie is the music.
Yeah.
The score is gorgeous, and it's constantly.
I think it's Danny Elfman.
It might be. I think it's Bruno Coulet, I think.
Oh, what am I thinking?
Double check, though, because I know Elfman obviously did Nightmare.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe his...
They might have both done it.
I might have been watching something else that he popped. Because Danny Elfman is like...
Yeah.
Danny Elfman has a massive...
It's crazy. Because I think I came to know him through movies like Nightmare and like more sort of kid stuff. And then I went, oh, he also scored like Good Will Hunting or something.
Right, yeah. Like, yeah.
I don't think it was Good Will Hunting, but he did that stuff too. He's wonderful. But yeah, the music in Coraline, it is orchestral, but there's a lot of like vocals of just like little kids.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's Bruno
Coulet. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like chanting and stuff that I don't always know what they're saying.
Right, yes.
Which again makes it creepier.
Creepier, yeah.
Or you'll catch like a word or two occasionally.
Yeah.
It's very effective. I'm sure there are stop motion movies I haven't liked, but well, I'm Laika's movies I tend, because they did Coraline and Paranorman. I wasn't crazy about Missing Link. I haven't seen Box Trolls in a minute, but Kubo and the Two Strings is wonderful. They're just like always making something interesting. Jordan Peele just worked on one called Wendell and Wild on Netflix.
I didn't know that.
I think is going to be right up your alley because it's kind of like a Beetlejuice thing.
Oh, yeah. I do love Beetlejuice.
And where this girl, her parents die and she has these demons, but they're like her friends. And it's Key and Peele.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Voices. And I think Jordan Peele like co-wrote it. And supposedly it's a very, very good movie.
What's it called?
Wendell and Wild. But I really want to watch it. And I confess I wasn't the biggest fan of Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Yeah, I wasn't nuts about it. However, it does look fantastic.
Yeah.
Because he is a very good visual director,
and it is
stop motion. But like, I love Nightmare so much.
Yeah.
And I think Corpse Bride is good. And
yeah.
I liked Monkey Bone.
I haven't heard of Monkey Bone. What is that?
It's not a popular movie. Brendan Fraser.
Oh my God, I love him.
In the 90s.
I love him.
He plays like an illustrator who made this character called Monkey Bone. And it's just, Monkey Bone is kind of like a crass character. And then he like goes into this like other dimension where Monkey Bone, who's the stop motion character, run around. But there's also people in like these crazy costumes and outfits. Mm-hmm. So it's like kind of Beetlejuicy.
Ooh, okay.
I just remember being probably not a quote unquote good movie, but a really fun movie to look at. Because I like costumes and prosthetics and wild makeup and stuff. So, but anyway, I really like James the Giant Peach.
Oh, that one's so good. That was one of my favorite novels as a kid too. And I was so excited when I watched the movie for the first time. That is another one that like is way creepier in the visual format.
The stuff with the ants at the beginning is just chilling.
Because that book is by Roald Dahl, and it's challenged a lot for being too scary for kids.
Yeah.
So I loved that they made it into a movie and made it essentially scarier.
Yeah, well, with the rhino and the clouds is terrifying.
Yeah. And it's just so good. I remember reading it because I had read, obviously, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
And I'd read The Witches and loved that. And then also, if you know anything about me, I'm like weirdly obsessed with peaches. It's not weird. I grew up behind a peach orchard. My husband likes to say I'm snobby about peaches, but which is kind of true. But I was like, ooh, peach. And then I like was like, all right, there are many factors in this. And I was like, he gets to live inside of a peach.
Well, then you should listen to the Wolf Alice song, Giant Peach.
I did start listening to them.
So
I don't
good.
Think I got to that song,
it's
though.
Such a good song. It's about like her relationship with her hometown. And the guitar is crazy. And she screams several times. And then there's just like this crashing instrumental at the end. I love it. It's one of my running songs.
I think I'm going to pull them into the book because I like the variety of it.
They have a lot of types. Like their music
is...
Like Freezy is a very danceable song. Don't Delete the Kisses is a kind of a wistful, downtrodden song.
I think that's
song.
The first one I listened to.
I really like that. I listened to that earlier today. And then they do have some that's like... this is called Yuck Foo and it's just like screaming. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I like that. I've never written fiction before.
Mm-hmm.
I've written a lot of nonfiction essays type stuff over the years. I've never written fiction before.
And I'll Arrive in the Dark by Harley Galorn Stewart.
I don't know the rules about what you can put in, like, as far as, like, music. Like, can I?
Oh,
I think I can put real bands in, but I don't think I can, like, quote.
Like, citing
music.
I don't know.
I'm probably not going to worry about it. I'm just going to write it, and then if I have to, like, go back and change it. But,
I can't imagine there's an issue with saying, she was listening to Giant Peach by Wolf Alice.
Right.
But then if you started writing the lyrics down and quoting them.
I think that's where the issue comes in.
Yeah, I truly don't know.
But yeah, it's interesting to kind of go through. But no, I love that. Yeah, I've always really loved stop motion animation too. I watched, I don't remember how old I was, but I feel like, I don't know, I know that Nightmare was like a very like formative movie for me.
Totally.
I loved it like instantly.
Oh, it's incredible.
And then so I kind of delved into more of the other stuff by people like Burton and
Selleck.
Yeah, it was great.
Nightmare is also like 85 minutes long. It's so short.
It is. It's a great, and people are like, I don't understand why you watch it or how it's a kids movie. And I'm like, no, it's great because
yeah,
it's
so
not
short.
Long. It's actually not scary.
Yeah, it's really not that bad. It's very funny. The music is terrific. The mayor is great.
The mayor is my favorite.
I'm only an elected official. I can't make decisions by myself.
I was going to say, I had Target release this line of like plastic straw cups during Halloween. And it was like, there was a Baby Yoda one where he was like trick-or-treating or whatever. And then there was a Nightmare set. And I have one that's like, it's like a blue see-through plastic cup. And the mayor's on it, and it says, I'm only an elected official. And well, it's my favorite thing to drink at, like, to drink out of at work.
I still say whenever we've, like, accomplished something at work or finished recording an episode of a podcast, I will say, I believe it was our most horrible yet. Thank you, everyone.
Yes. Okay, so Nightmare came out in 1993. I was born in 1992, so I did. Well, I was watching it, like, as a child. I was like, am I imagining this? Because my timelines get mixed. But no, I really was, like,
incredible.
Because my older brother liked it. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the few movies that was actually appropriate for him to watch with me, as opposed to House of Thousand Corpses when I was like 11. But yeah, no, so I think I spiraled into this type of film or this type of like creative format pretty early. Sure. I saw too, and this is Nightmare, not Coraline, but the Modern Museum of Art when I was in high school had a Tim Burton exhibit.
Ooh.
And so I got to see some of the like Nightmare figurines. That's and it had a lot of like costume design and set stuff like that. But yeah, seeing that like puppet up close, like it's just that form is such an incredible talent.
Yes.
Like there's, it's a whole other.
Move him a fraction, take a picture.
Right.
Move him a fraction, take a picture.
It just, it's just a whole, I feel like it's such an elevated art form that doesn't get its proper due.
Yeah, and there aren't as many, probably more than I realized, there aren't as many because it takes so long to do.
Yes, yeah.
And which is why it's so, I always want them to make a lot of money, so we'll keep,
Right, so they'll keep making it.
And like, it's such an achievement. There's very much another kids movie, a movie called Anomalisa, that is, it's one of my favorite movies, it's crushing, about it, it's stop motion, I mean, and all these movies have digital assist. There are, you know, visual effects to smooth in the animation, move the mouths around and the eyes. And like you can tell Coraline's mouth is animated. But also they are still putting light bulbs in the bugs or whatever, or extending. It also is a physical thing augmented by visual stuff. But Anomalisa is also that hybrid about a guy who is so beat down by the rut of his life that everyone in the movie has the same face and the same voice.
Oh,
it's
interesting.
David Thewlis is the main character and Tom Noonan is everybody else. Like children, adults, everybody.
Wow, okay.
Men, women, no matter what. Except for he meets a woman who has a different face and her own voice whose name is Lisa. She's an anomaly. There you go.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And they meet and it's a whole thing about existential stuff. But it has the most, I don't, it's not hot, but it's a really powerful sex scene where it really, more than any other movie that I've seen, feels like, oh, this is someone else's life. This feels so natural. And it may all be, they might not actually have sex. I mean, they do, but you may not actually witness it. It's it's the build up to it.
Yeah.
But it really feels like, oh, this is, I have been brought into another, into this couple's evening and I am intruding. Like,
it's
so natural and so real, or feels so natural that it's like, it's such an impressive thing. And it's a great movie. I love it. But it is not for everybody. because it is crushing and weird. And but man, I love it.
We were talking about Chris Evans earlier. One of my favorite roles that he's in is a movie called Gifted, and
it is an
incredible movie. I sobbed through the entire thing.
I'm sure.
I think anyone could get it. I think anyone watching it would get emotional. There were a lot of personal similarities for my life. I was raised by my stepdad, mm-hmm. And so I saw a lot of correlation there. But I always want to recommend it to people, but I feel like it's not one of those movies that's for everyone.
And
for
yet,
that reason.
Definitely more accessible. And he's great. And McKenna Grace, the little girl in that, yes. she's so such good. A treasure.
Yeah, I love it so much. I want to go back and watch it again, but sure. I know that it'll just be a disaster.
Yeah,
so
you
I
gotta
have
like,
it.
Steal
I just,
yourself.
The, I don't know why or how, but the every now and then a couple scenes will come up on TikTok and I'm just like, okay, I'll watch this.
Yeah.
I'll watch this 30 second scene.
I do it with Anomalisa sometimes. Like, I can watch like the first half and after all, I'm like, oh yeah, the ending is, the second half is just like, oh God.
Yeah, I don't actually want, yeah.
But let me just get the flavor of mm-hmm. this thing.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful. Yeah, I think it's an interesting, and I don't know sort of the story of adapting Coraline, if Gaiman said, hey, I want this to be animated, mm-hmm. or if Henry Selick got the rights for it. I don't know how it all kind of
came to be. Because he has several other films or television shows, and I think Coraline might be the only stop motion animation.
I think it might be. Yeah, because like Sandman is live action, and Good Omens, and American Gods.
Yeah, and Stardust
was live action.
Years ago was live action, and that's another, like that one's in YA, so you would think, but yeah.
But Coraline just went right to
to
animated, which may have just been that Henry Selick happened to be the one to grab it. I don't know.
I can't.
But I'm glad it did.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wouldn't be difficult so much to make that into a live action movie, but I don't think it'll have the same effect.
I don't think so either. I think that because it is so, it's not about a bunch of crazy animals and stuff.
Right.
You kind of would think, oh, well, you would just cast a kid and put button eyes on a lady. But
right.
it's so much,
because
animation is so freeing. They have the other mother change shape and morph throughout the movie, and that's terrifying. And she's a very scary.
She is actually very scary.
Like, it's a scary movie.
Yeah, I live with a friend who has a 7-year-old little girl, and she was like, we tried to watch it a couple years ago and, like, couldn't. Like, it was just too much.
No, there is some genuinely scary stuff.
And this kid loves Nightmare Before Christmas.
Well, like, the little kid ghosts.
Yes.
Like, some of that stuff is really sad and scary, like, for sure. And I think just what animation allows is that total liberty to just, we'll have, as opposed to like, well, we got to put this actor in increasingly weirder makeup. And not that you can't have incredible physical effects.
Right.
It does exist.
It is,
but
as much as stop motion takes so much time and effort, it does seem like it would take so much more effort and like physical material to make to have even somewhat of a similar effect.
And it probably wouldn't work as effectively.
No, I don't think it would.
And I think right now it would all just be digital effects anyway.
Right.
Which at that point, why not just make it animated
and
just end up back where you are? And I don't hate CGI, but I think even like Pixar, which I love, Pixar feels very, CGI feels very weighted. It feels weighted down.
Mm-hmm.
But hand-drawn animation is just so fluid and can just do whatever.
Right.
And then stop motion, while being physical props, feels somehow in between.
That's a good point.
That even while I'm watching Coraline, as I know those are all physical things affected by gravity, I know that, or it feels weightless and it feels very alive and sprightly. There's a lot of just really interesting camera angles, like the way Selick goes, oh, what if we shot it this way, or what if we moved the camera around and followed her this way? It's just interesting.
Yeah.
It's a more, I think it's interesting. I'm paying more attention now to how cameras are used in movies, which is something you always are aware of. You don't think about it. But like, I watched a movie called Decision to Leave recently, and that movie does a lot of just, oh, what if we move the camera this way or pan over this way? Mm-hmm. And that just kind of makes you pay a little more attention because you're like, oh, I'm getting a different angle on this than I was. I think that Selick does that really beautifully with this, where you're not, I don't know, it's just presented in a very interesting way.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I think, too, the other part I loved that was more effective in the movie than in the book was when she starts venturing outside of the zone around the house.
Oh, and the whiteout.
Right, the whiteout.
So good.
Because the other mother hasn't, like, it's not a full world. It's just what the other mother has sort of created so she can sort of lure Coraline in. Also, I did love that they kept, like, they did the Caroline Coraline thing.
Yeah.
And I have often thought that I would love to name a child Coraline, sure. but I, like she would have the same thing. And I always got mad growing up still as an adult, get annoyed when people don't spell my name right. So I was like, if I was called an entirely other name, I would just like lose it. But yeah, the whiteout from when she walks past what sort of the other mother has created, it's so much more effective than just sort of like reading. And Gaiman is such a visual writer that like if you just read the book, you get it. Like it's still effective, but it's just so much more jarring when she like as she starts fading into the white space.
And that's also terrifying to me. The idea of being in a void is just so scary
right,
to me.
Yeah. And you don't realize it's a void. Yeah. Like, you know, like or at least Coraline doesn't realize it's anything other than like, you know, like actually the physical house that she's
right,
in.
Right.
You know, like, so that was really interesting. I think that the ending was so much more satisfying in the movie.
Sure.
I just feel like it, and again, I think that's because of Wybie. Like, like partnership of like getting the other mother's hand that like breaks off and comes into the regular world, like getting that. I mean, it's cool the way they do it in the book, because Coraline's really smart and she, like, you know, figures out a way to do it. But I just liked the, I don't know, I just felt more settled, I guess.
Yeah, no, I felt the same way. And I think that, I don't know. I think you're right. I think settled is the right word.
Yeah.
I also just think that as visual a writer as Gaiman is, the illustrations help so much. And I don't know if at this point it's just because I've had such a visual experience with Coraline that I now feel like I need the visuals.
Yeah. I do think if you see the movie before you read the book, it will be a little disappointing.
Yeah, and that's not even...
Not that it's a bad... Right.
No,
like, it's
no.
Not that it's
and even
a
to someone
bad
who's,
experience.
And even to someone who's not a Neil Gaiman fan, like, I still don't think it's, like, bad. I just didn't respond to it.
Yeah.
But I respond to the movie so much, and I think it's just a matter of I love the way it's made. Yeah. I just love the way it looks and sounds. And
yeah. It's really good.
It just works.
It's a... neat one, and it's kind of like I don't know, I feel like anyone kind of can get into it.
It'll be interesting as we do more of these to see if we end up talking about the book or the adaptation more.
Yeah, because this one does feel like we talked way more about the movie.
Yeah, I think it's just because there's also the thing about adapting books, specifically books into other media, is that We sort of have this idea that the book is always better somehow.
Right. And
I just don't think that's
true. I don't think that's true. And I used to think that. I used to be very diehard, like, the book is better. I don't.
Right.
Like, I remember when Harry Potter started coming out, and I was so mad at the stuff that got left out, which, by the way, did you see that HBO picked up for a television show?
7 seasons.
And I know that we rightfully are very anti-J.K. Rowling right now, because as a person, she's not that great. But, like, as someone who grew up with the Harry Potter movies and is such a, like, book nerd, and I would get so annoyed at the stuff that they left out. And I used to say all the time, they should make this a television show. Mm-hmm. I am fucking, like, thrilled. but, yeah, I remember, like, the shift of, like, when I started, like, realizing, like, I was old enough to start paying attention to the differences between books and movies. And we do. Like, society kind of has this, like,
the book is inevitably better, which I don't like the idea that any art form is superior to any other art form.
Right.
It's just not. I do think that frequently what happens is we view the book as occurring because of the creative muse, the spark that lives in artists and births great wonder, whereas we view movies as capitalist opportunism.
Right, right.
Which sometimes,
yeah.
A book sells enough copies or isn't even published yet.
Yeah.
And then they're like Artemis Fowl, I think, wasn't even published where they bought the movie rights.
Right.
And then it was in development hell for 20 years or
I was going to say, those books have been out for so long before the movie.
And then they just sort of dropped the movie, which apparently is awful. And
I never watched it.
It's just like, well, yeah, I mean, that does happen.
Yeah.
But sometimes people find a book and like a specific artist finds it and they're like, hey, I think this is really special. I would like to adapt this into a musical or into a movie or a TV show. Or sometimes it kind of goes the capitalist route, but someone really talented gets a hold of them and is like, oh, I'll make it, and they make it beautifully. Like, it's just...
Right. It can be terrible, but I think, you know, I really love the idea that, like, so for me as a creative person, the format that comes out in often is writing. And like, if I have a story to tell, I'm going to tell it in a book or right. an essay or whatever. But there are a lot of creators who are visual creators and wanted, like, if they wanted to, like, I just love that you can look at it, directors and stuff, people like Henry Selick can look at a book and look at a story
yeah.
and say, oh, I really love this, and then, like, expand it into right. something beautiful. And I don't think it takes away from the book. I think nope. it I think it enhances the book. I think yeah. that especially with this particular one, like, I think you get more out of the story if you read the book and watch the yeah. movie.
Well, like when people say, oh, you ruined this thing, they didn't. Like, my favorite TV show is Avatar The Last Airbender,
mm-hmm.
and one of the worst movies I've ever seen is The Last Airbender.
Yeah, yeah.
But that movie doesn't ruin the show.
Right.
Because the show is still, I can still go watch
it's
the
show.
It's
still there, right, exactly.
Yeah, the movie sucks, but, like, I can still go watch it. Yeah. So it doesn't really, I know what people are saying is,
right.
you did it badly.
You didn't give it justice,
right.
so to speak. And that can be true,
yeah,
but it
absolutely.
Doesn't, again,
plenty
like,
of things that have been adapted into something
right.
bad.
If you don't like the movie, just go back and read the book.
Yeah, like, you're
because,
it doesn't stop it. Right. I will say, I don't like to buy books with the movie
I hate the movie covers. I hate the movie tie-in covers.
And that is not, listen, I specifically, I love Mackenzie Davis very much. Why would I say no to more pictures of Mackenzie Davis?
Right.
But I bought the copy of Station 11 that didn't have her face on it because, one, I love the
right,
standard
the cover.
Copy of Station 11.
I love a cover art. Like,
yeah.
There, it's again, that's such a beautiful, like, aspect, too, of being
yeah.
able to, like, read a story or be given the concept of a story and then put it into your
yeah.
brain and have it come out in the art format that you
right.
understand.
But I also don't want a book that says up now a major motion picture.
I
just want the cover.
I bought, what did I buy recently? I bought something recently and it had that on there and I thought it was a sticker
yeah.
that I could pull off and I got home and it wasn't and I was so mad.
I know. I just want the cover.
Just want the cover.
But I
mean, and it was like the original cover art, but
right,
it was
right.
like the now a major, like now
yeah.
a Netflix movie or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think with books we have, art is collaborative in general, but with a book, I think you have the advantage in a way of, like, I'm telling the story with words.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there might be illustrations, and there's a lot of things you can do with language, but you are writing a book. With a movie, you can communicate that information with music, with acting,
right.
with cinematography, with all of these different components, which on the one hand means, oh, you have so many more tools.
Right.
That also means so many more things can go wrong.
Right, yeah.
And if one of those things fails, it can
right.
the whole tower can fall.
Yes.
Whereas with a book, it's like, well, I'm only using one tool.
Right.
So I have to do everything with
yes.
that tool.
It is vaguely more restrictive.
Yeah, and so they're both, like, which is more, when you're making a movie or a TV show, you got a bunch of different voices coming in the room mm-hmm. saying, well, I want to shoot it like this. Okay,
right.
well, I want to write it like this. Well, I want to perform it like this.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to design it like this. And are they all going to
right.
combine with a book? And again, I know that it is not explicit because you have an editor and maybe an
well,
illustrator.
And I was
going
to say, you do, but
you
get to write it before it gets to that point.
Exactly.
Like, you get to tell
yeah.
the story.
You still get to sit down
and
say, this is
my thing. And then
someone
else goes in and says, here's how we can make this better
yeah.
versus, like you were saying, when you make a movie, all that stuff sort of has to happen at the same time.
Right.
And it can work really well or mm-hmm. it can be like a dumpster fire.
And depending on whether it's a movie that a producer is like, we're producing it, hire a writer.
Right.
Or a writer saying, I've got a script, I need a producer.
Right,
like,
yeah.
It happens in a billion different ways. And so,
yeah.
which is what makes it interesting to talk about. And
yes.
I like it. It does work out. Like, To Kill a Mockingbird is a great movie. I would love for us to do Atonement at some point because I think those
you said
are.
Said that, and I meant to reply to that text. I hate that girl. I hate that girl so much.
Bryony?
Yes.
She's
so
the villain.
Bad. I know.
But she's
just,
played by my favorite,
like,
actor of all time.
I don't think I've read the book. I think
yeah.
I've only seen the movie. I just remember, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
like it was years ago that I saw the movie. I think
yeah,
I saw
yeah.
it when it came out. And I still, like, viscerally feel
sure, sure.
hatred for that character.
That introduced me to my favorite actor of all time, though, Saoirse.
But
I mean,
yes.
that is such an interesting one to talk about, I think, because the book and the movie work for me, but explicitly book reasons, explicitly movie reasons.
Oh,
like, they're not
yeah,
good
yeah,
bedfellows.
Yeah. Right.
But anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another episode.
Yes, we will do that one at some point.
Yeah.
I think we decided Daisy Jones next.
That could be, I think that'd be a fun one, because I do want to watch that show, and I
do
want to read
yeah.
that book.
And I love Taylor Jenkins Reid, but I loved that she wrote, and we'll talk about this a little more. A lot of people think that book was inspired by Fleetwood Mac, and there are she does pull from Fleetwood Mac in it. Like, it's very obvious because it's set in, like, the 70s, you know, that sort of thing.
This song is called You Go Your Way.
I'm actually reading a different – I'm finally reading The Villa by Rachel Hawkins, which is inspired by all of my checkpoints of Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, right.
The Manson Murders and The Summer Mary Shelley Wrote Frankenstein.
Go Your Own Way.
Go Your Own Way. But there's a
– You Make Murder Fun.
There's a song called The Golden Chain. And so it's like obviously – so – Jenkins Reed doesn't really do that, but she pulls heavily, like, the visual, I think, from them. But it was actually inspired from when the Civil Wars broke up a couple years ago.
Oh, wow.
And when I heard that, I was so much more interested. Like, I was like, this is a – because I used to like their music and listen to them, but I, like, don't really know anything about their band history. And I was like, I like that this is a modern band breakup that inspired you. But yeah, so it's a television show. I think it has 10 or 12 episodes.
Something like that.
So it'll be interesting to do a podcast episode with that format too.
Yeah.
Because you can, a lot of stories. I don't know if that's a story that I would have said needed to be a television show, but I do think that it was an easy story to build a television show off of.
Yeah. I don't know off the top of my head. I know a couple of the actors. I don't know off the top of my head the creative team behind it.
Yeah, I don't know anything else.
I'm sure if I looked it up, I'd recognize something. Yeah. But to my knowledge, it's not like, oh, from the creator of Succession.
It's kind of more of a...
We'll find out. But from what I understand, it was very well received by audiences. I haven't read any reviews of it.
Because
I was kind of like, oh, I want to read it first. I want to be fairly ignorant.
Right.
I'm getting the vibe that people like it. And that's enough. I don't want to actually get information about it yet.
Right, yes.
Let me read it.
And I'm excited because I read it when it first came out, so it's been it's been a minute, and so I don't remember, like, the details.
Well, I just like Riley Keough. She's Elvis's granddaughter.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And she's a very good actor.
Yeah.
Very good actor.
I love that. So in the book, Taylor Jenkins Reid writes the lyrics out for all of the songs that are on their biggest album.
Like Redwall.
And then when they recorded the show, they had the actors record the album. So you can go on Spotify and listen to the album, which I'm going to do while I reread it.
Yeah.
Because I've already read it.
For sure.
I think it'll be a fun fun vibe. Okay, cool. Well, Britton will be back soon.
Yeah.
I think Erica's next. Hate to break it to you.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
You're just sandwiched in between her right now. but yeah, so thanks for coming on. We'll see you guys next
time. Bye, guys.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it and you've got an extra moment, I'd love if you would rate and review us on Apple Podcast. If you'd like to keep up with us outside of the weekly episodes, find us on Instagram at @talesfromabibliophile. You can also shoot us any feedback, any comments or stories or anything at all that you'd like to share at talesfromabibliophile@gmail.com. Happy reading!